This morning, if you want to turn to Matthew chapter 17, that's where we will land here in a few minutes, Matthew chapter 17. I don't know how many of you are fans like I am. I like J.R.R. Tolkien's classic series, classic trilogy, The Lord of the Rings. And in the series, The Lord of the Rings, Tolkien introduces a character very early in the first book. One of the main characters of the whole story is a shadowy man at the beginning known as Strider. Well, very quickly, as he's introducing over a series of events, introducing Strider to you, you begin to understand that there is something more to this character and to who this character is than just the facts that have been shed and the light that has been given on who he is. You really begin to expect something is going to transpire that tells you more of who he is. And so over the next few pages, over the next few events that take place, you begin to get more and more clues to who Strider is. Until one of the other characters stands up for him in the midst of a heated scene. Another character stands up for him and identifies and unveils the fact that Strider is actually the heir of a king and himself the rightful king. In much the same way, when Jesus came to the earth, he lived in the shadows. And it was only clue by clue, it was only little by little that he began to let it known who he really is. Now, while we may read the story with the knowledge, with that knowledge of who Jesus is before us, we have to remember that his disciples, that those who were his followers, that those who were his opponents, and even those who didn't even know that they should care, they didn't know who Jesus was. And that's why his disciples could ask that question that we've been asking the last few weeks. Who is this that even the winds and the water obey him? And so little by little, decided clue by decided clue, Jesus began showing who he was. But he chose to whom he would reveal information. And he chose how much information he would reveal at any given point. That's why we see him not allowing the demons to testify about who he was. And that's why he would look at people after he had done something miraculous for them and tell them not to tell what he had done. That's why he chose titles for himself that weren't necessarily the titles that people were looking for God's chosen agent, because he would choose titles that didn't reveal who he really was, or titles that couldn't be misunderstood and misconstrued to mean something that he didn't want them to mean. Because Jesus was protecting his identity. And this morning's text marks one of those moments when Jesus is going to give some self-identifying information to his disciples. And for one moment, for one brief moment, Jesus is going to give a glimpse of his true glory to some of his disciples. Not to all 12, but to 3. And while each of the synoptic gospel writers tell the story, we're going to look at Matthew's account of what has become known as the Transfiguration. I think that's a misnomer, because I think it's less of a transfiguration as it is a revelation. But that's how we know it. We know it as the Transfiguration. And so from Matthew chapter 17, this is what we read. It says, after 6 days, and this is 6 days after Jesus and his disciples have been in Caesarea Philippi, and Jesus asks them, who do you say I am? Or who do people say I am? And then who do you say I am? And Peter gives his memorable testimony. You are the Christ, the Son of God. After which Jesus calls him, says, upon this rock I'll build my church. And then a couple sentences later said, get behind me, Satan, to Peter. So, but this is after the disciples have already identified that Jesus is the Christ. They have come to that conclusion. And so it says, after 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up to a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. Just then, there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up 3 shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. While he was still speaking, a bright cloud enveloped them, and a voice from the cloud said, this is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him. When the disciples heard this, they fell face down to the ground, terrified. But Jesus came and touched them. Get up, he said. Do not be afraid. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus instructed them, don't tell anyone what you have seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. And so we see Jesus giving a little bit of information to his disciples. You see, Jesus is revealing some things about himself in this moment to the disciples. He's identifying for them, first of all, that he is greater. Jesus is looking at his disciples, or Jesus is taking Peter, James, and John up on this mountain by themselves. They get away. I don't know. I kind of wonder if maybe Jesus had to leave the other 9 disciples down to do crowd control. Jesus wanted to get away with Peter, James, and John. Jesus wanted to get away and pray. Jesus wanted to identify some things about himself to Peter, James, and John. And as we've seen in the past, when Jesus tries to get away, the crowds follow him. This is one instance where we don't read about the crowds. We don't see the crowds pressing in around Jesus. I wonder if he chose to take the 3 and leave the other 9 to protect the privacy. I don't know that. That's just my conjecture. But what I do know is this, and yes, I just said I do know, dear. I know. She gets on me for things I say, so. Not in a bad way. She just tells me I say things too much. And then I talk too much and I get in trouble. So anyway, Moses. Jesus is going to show his disciples that he is greater, and he begins by showing that he is greater than Moses. One of the things that we have to understand is there is a reason that after Peter, James, and John, who have been tired and drowsy and dozing off on the mountain while Jesus is praying, spending time with the Father, while Jesus is doing that, the disciples are dozing off, and then Moses and Elijah come, and they are there having this discussion with Jesus. I've always wondered how James, John, and Peter know who Moses and Elijah are. Do they have name tags? You know, we go to meet people and they introduce themselves, or we go someplace where there's lots of people and maybe you've got a name tag. Maybe Moses and Elijah had on name tags. I don't know. But Peter and John, they recognize Moses. Jesus is having this conversation and they recognize him. And just about as soon as they recognize who Moses and Elijah are, Moses and Elijah are gone. Now we have to understand who Moses is. We probably know some things about Moses. Moses was the leader of the people. The people would look to Moses as the great leader of their history. And there were a few through history, a few of the people that held a special place in the mind and the memory of the Israelites. And Moses was a leader. In fact, we first find Moses, and he is the leader of the people out of Egypt. He is the leader of the Exodus. He is the one that God chose to use to bring the people out of slavery and to progressively move them in the direction of the promised land. The promise that God had made Abraham. And so when the people would look at Moses, they would look at him as this leader, but they also remembered Moses as the giver of the Torah, the giver of the instructions that God had given to the people, instructions about how they should live with one another. They were coming out of slavery and they were going into a land of freedom, and God wanted them to know how they were supposed to live with one another. And to live with one another in such a way that their relationships would be a magnet to other people, to draw them in, to say, what is it about you people that makes you different? And so God gave them rules, and God gave them regulations, and God gave them the laws about how they were supposed to live through Moses, and Moses taught them about how they were supposed to live with one another. But then God also gave them instructions. He gave them the teaching. He gave them the law about how they were to interact and how they were to live with God. One of those things, we don't understand completely how we're supposed to live with God unless He tells us. He gives us the instructions and He says, this is how you are to relate to me. And so He gave them the laws about relationship, but He also gave them the laws about when they fail. And so He said, this is how you live with me, but when you mess up, I'm going to give you a means, I'm going to give you a manner of how to come back to me. And Moses was known as the one who gave the law. In fact, even today, we talk about the law of Moses. Talking about the first five books of the Bible. The teachings and the laws, the regulations on how we do life together and how we do life with God. And in Moses being present, one of the things that Jesus is showing his disciples is how he is greater than Moses. And one of the other things that we often don't think about Moses is the fact that Moses just wasn't the leader of the people. He wasn't just the giver of the Torah, but in many ways, Moses was the first priest. Moses was from the family of Levi, who would later become the priests for all of the people. And so Moses in many ways served the role of the priest. And I like what the writer of Hebrews says in Hebrews chapter 1. Right at the very beginning of his book, the writer of Hebrews says, in the past, God spoke to us through our forefathers. I want in chapter 5 this time. Hebrews 1 is in a few minutes. Just preview of what's coming up. Hebrews chapter 5, beginning at verse 1, it says, every high priest is selected from among men and is appointed to represent them in matters related to God, to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. He is able to deal gently with those who are ignorant and are going astray, since he himself is subject to weakness. This is why he has to offer sacrifices for his own sin as well as for the sins of the people. No one takes this honor upon himself. He must be called by God, just as Aaron was. So Christ also did not take up upon himself the glory of becoming a high priest. But God said to him, you are my son. Today I have become your father. And he says in another place, you are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. Jesus is a priest who is greater than Moses. We need to see that from this passage of Scripture. And I'll explain why in a little bit that we can see that. But we also have the fact that Jesus is greater than Elijah. Well, I don't know why Elijah was chosen. There are several great prophets that are mentioned throughout the pages of Scripture. My only reason for thinking this is some of the things that Elijah did. Elijah was known as one of the greatest prophets. In fact, there are times and places where it says that Elijah will come before the great and glorious day of the Lord. Before the coming of the Messiah, Elijah would come. Because the people believed, the people knew that Elijah was the great prophet. Samuel was a prophet. Elisha was a good prophet. Some of the other prophets carried out some important ministries and gave some important information to the people. I think about Isaiah and Malachi. But Elijah was known as the great prophet, the greatest prophet of the people. And as the prophet of God, Elijah very much, he was calling the people back to God. If you look at the books of Kings and Chronicles and you read the story of Elijah, what you find is Elijah was constantly calling the people back to the relationship that they were supposed to have with God. If Moses was the giver of the law, Elijah's job was to remind the people of what the law said. And over and over and over again, Elijah was calling the people back to God. And at the same time he was calling them back to God, he was reminding the people of God's promises and warnings, his blessings and his curses. He was reminding them that God said, if you are faithful, I will bless you, and this is how I will be faithful to you. But at the same time, he was saying, if you are not faithful, this is what God has promised will take place. This is what God has said will happen to you. And if we read the stories, the accounts of Elijah and his ministry, we see Elijah doing both. Calling people back to God and warning them about what God said would take place. I think there's another reason that Elijah was chosen for this particular interaction between Jesus, the two great men of Israel's history, and Peter, James, and John. And that is because there are many miracles that were attested to and recorded with the ministry of Elijah. Elijah did several different miracles, or maybe we should say miracles had been done for him and through him. Miracles like the provision of food. When the nation and the region was going through a drought, God provided for Elijah and a widow woman in miraculous ways. We see throughout the ministry of Jesus, the feeding of the 5,000, the feeding of the 4,000, the water at the wedding feast in Canaan that becomes wine. We see that in Elijah's ministry, he is the giver of life. Well, not really he himself, but God working through him gives life to a lady who had been barren, and she gives birth to a son. Which leads to another part of this, and that is the restoration of life that we see in Elijah when he gives life back to this young boy. And in Jesus' ministry, we see that he is the giver of life. And at times, we see him as the restorer of life. In many ways, echoing the ministry of Elijah. But we see Moses, and then we see Elijah up on the mount. And the reason we see Elijah is because Jesus is greater than Elijah. And I like what the writer of Hebrews says. I told you we'd get back to Hebrews chapter 1. I was just skipping ahead a little bit. Hebrews chapter 1, right at the beginning of his message, the writer of Hebrews says this. He says, in the past, God spoke to our forefathers through the prophets at many times and in various ways, but in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things and through whom he made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. After he has provided purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven. Jesus is greater than any of the prophets. Jesus is greater than all of the prophets put together. And we see this. We see this in the account that Matthew records and what he says to us. But here's the question. If Jesus is greater than Moses, if Jesus is greater than Elijah, we need to stand with the disciples and say, if Jesus is greater, then who is this? Who is this man? And the gospel writers tell us, and Matthew tells us, that Jesus is the only one left. If you were to talk to somebody from Israel in the time of Jesus and you were to ask about the great men, and they would tell you there were three great men. There were more than that, but there are three that would really stick out. There's Moses, and there is Elijah, and there's David. After Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, if you were talking about the history of Israel, those are the three that you would look to, that you would say, Moses, Elijah, and David. The prophet, the priest, and the king. If we look and we say, who's left? We've seen Moses, we've seen Elijah, who's left? Well, that leads us with the Davidic king. But in the fact that we see that Moses and Elijah, who had been talking with Jesus, who we would put as the Messianic king, the Davidic king, who was promised to come, we look up and Moses and Elijah are gone. And who's left? Well, it's Jesus. But not just as the Messianic King. What we see in Jesus, what we see Moses showing us, and what Moses bringing out piece by piece, clue by clue, what we see is he's showing us that Jesus is going to perform, Jesus is going to fulfill, Jesus is going to combine all three roles. If we look at Hebrews chapter 5, we find that Jesus is the great high priest who is greater than Moses as the giver of the law. We read in chapter 1 of the book of Hebrews that Jesus is greater than all of the prophets. Jesus is a great prophet. He is greater than all of the other prophets. He's greater than Elijah. And Jesus is going to be a greater king. Jesus is the great king who is ruling on high. Jesus, after Moses and Elijah is gone, Jesus is left, and we see Jesus as unique. Jesus is not like Moses and Elijah. He is different. Because Jesus combines and Jesus fulfills all three positions. If you look back at the history of Israel, from the very beginning, God said, "You're not to have a king, because I am your king." And so he gave Moses as their leader, who was a priest, who went back and forth as God's representative between man and between God. And he did the priestly roles. But Jesus is unique because he's greater than Moses. Later, God would come through the prophet and he would speak to the earthly kings, the descendants of David, and in the northern tribes of Israel, the descendants of whoever happened to be holding the throne at that point in time. Because if you read their history, it wasn't a single genealogy. It wasn't one lineage. There were several. But those prophets would come and those prophets would go, and they would share God's message. But when Moses and Elijah are gone, we see the glory of God. It says that this bright cloud enveloped them. It enveloped the top of the mountain. And if we look at this, we should be thinking of the Shekinah glory of God. The glory of God that has shown up at different times through Israel's history as the cloud. It's the glory of God that showed up on the mountain when Moses went up to get the law from God. It is the glory of God that showed up in the tabernacle when Moses and Aaron consecrated and did the original purification of the tabernacle. And the presence of God came over the tent. And the Levites couldn't go into the presence of God. It is the same presence of God that we see when Solomon has built the temple and Solomon is consecrating the temple to the service of God. And the glory of God comes down on the temple and the cloud keeps the people out. It is that same cloud of glory that envelops the mountain and envelops Jesus and Moses and Elijah and Peter, James, and John. It is that presence of God that causes Peter to think that they should do something to remember this moment and this event. And it is from within that cloud that the voice of God sounds forth. And Peter, James, and John hear the voice of God say, "This is my Son, in whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." It is in this moment when Jesus has allowed Peter, James, and John to come up the mountain with him to come into the glorious presence of God on the mountain with Moses and Elijah. And it is at this moment that Peter, James, and John hear the revelation from God about who Jesus is. This is my son. There is no hiding it anymore from Peter, James, and John. Yes, Peter, you are right. This is Jesus, the Son of God. Yes, Peter, you are correct. You have it right. But it means so much more than you understood it to mean. But there is no hiding it anymore. The truth has been revealed. Jesus is God. And we see something from Jesus that we don't otherwise see. And that is His glory revealed. It isn't that Jesus suddenly has glory placed upon Him. It isn't suddenly that the nature of God is in Jesus at this moment for the first time, but rather it's not a transformation from one thing to another. It is a revelation of what has been there the whole time. Just as in Tolkien's book, the shadowy figure Strider was always the heir and the king. Jesus has always been God, and God's glory and radiance was always there, but Jesus has been hiding it in the flesh of humanity. And at this moment, on this mountain, Jesus reveals to Peter, James, and John, and God lets Peter, James, and John know that Jesus is God's Son. How many of you have ever noticed that the sun is still shining even when there's total cloud cover? If you haven't experienced that, let me just tell you this. If you go out today and you look up, you'll notice that it is cloudy. The clouds are covering the sky. But let me tell you, the sun is still shining on the other side of those clouds. Truthfully, you get in an airplane today and you fly, they'll get up above the clouds, and you can tell that the sun is still shining. And in fact, we have different sayings about that, and we talk about the sun coming out from behind the clouds. We talk about the sun breaking through the clouds. Well, in the same way, in that same manner, that's what we've seen in this text this morning. It isn't that something new has been added to Jesus. It isn't like suddenly God said, you know, it's been cloudy and dreary all day. I think I'll make a sun. No, the sun is shining even on the other side of the clouds. We may not see it, but we can believe it's there. In this moment, in this time, what Peter, James, and John get is a revelation of what has always been present in God. It's as if the sun, with an O, has been hiding behind the clouds of human flesh. And for just an instant, for just a moment, His innermost circle of His disciples are allowed to see the sun, again with an O, come shining out from behind the clouds. While they may not have fully grasped what it was they were experiencing in the moment, they would understand later that they were given a glimpse of the glory of Jesus Christ. That's why later in his life, the Apostle John is able to write, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we saw His glory, glory as the only begotten from the Father, full of grace and full of truth." And so while we could look at Jesus and we could say that He is a lot of things, and over the past few weeks, we've delved into this. Who is Jesus? He's the master of the spiritual realm. He's the master of nature. He's the master of... I lost a word. Somebody have an extra word I can have? I lost the one I was looking for.
Everything,
the elements. I think elements is the word I was looking for. But Jesus is all of those things. But at this moment, the writers of the gospel want us to see that Jesus is God incarnate. Jesus is greater than anyone else who has ever lived. Jesus is greater than anyone else who will ever live. And Jesus did what no other prophet, no other law, no other king could do. He came to offer us salvation through his own blood at Calvary.